Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I know that some of you on the right can't see that. I'll try to move around a bit, or failing that, to be thinner. It won't be absolutely necessary to see the slides, and in fact, up until about 10 minutes ago, I was planning to go without them. And at any rate, they'll be available on my website later on. The title of my talk, for those of you who can't see this, is On Being Radical. And it might not necessarily be the title that was expected, but it's the title that's here now. Usually I'm asked to do the closing wrap-up because I have some skill in that area. But the organizers of this conference thought it would be a neat idea to have me do the opening. And that's a bit of a different role. So I'm not going to be summarizing the technologies that you've already seen and talking about the applications that you can put into use in your classroom, because you're going to have many qualified presenters who are able to do that for you. And what I'm going to talk about is a perspective or a frame of mind to have as you look at these. And that perspective I've wrapped around the title On Being Radical. And in a sense, I'm here like perhaps a typical opening speaker to tell you a story. And of course, like all stories, I can't tell you the real story. But I'll tell you the story that I have right now. So here I am. And in a very real sense, we have a coming together of two paths. We have myself, from my birthplace in Montreal through Ottawa and Alberta, living in the north, living on the cold, frozen wasteland just down... No, I'm kidding. living in Brandon, living in Edmonton, living in New Brunswick, and the places I've been, and the people that I've seen and talked to. And we have you, all of you, who have come here from your communities, from your schools throughout Saskatchewan. And today, at this moment at least, we come together. And the question I have is, how did that happen? What made that possible? And of course, we know the proper story, right? Somebody sent me an email, I responded to the email, tickets were booked, reservations were made, I got on airplanes, I waited in hotels and lobbies and things like that. And all of the things that we know came together to put me here now in front of you when our paths crossed. But that is just a technical story. That doesn't tell us how it happened. Now, it's fitting, I think, that I'm going to give a talk like this in a place like this because, of course, this is the home of Tommy Douglas, Saskatchewan. You're probably tired of hearing about him. I imagine every visiting speaker comes to talk about him. But Tommy Douglas was a radical. He's a radical, a rather dangerous radical, as the quote says, and he brought, as you know, things like public health care, and things like rural electrification, things that today we take not simply for granted, but almost as ordinary, almost as orthodox. And what has happened is that once was radical has become the commonplace. And that too is the theme. How did it happen? John Stuart Mill is a philosopher in Britain. In the 1800s, was a radical. He wrote a book called On the Subjection of Woman. And he had the astonishing premise that women ought to be equal in society. And of course, for that, he was branded a radical. His ideas were wrong. And yet now, we take it as commonplace, expected, in our society at least, that women will not only have the vote, but be full and free members of society with every right and every privilege according to any other member of society. What is radical? Just recently concluded were the WSIS talks in Tunisia. And on the one hand, they were talking about the global internet, the governance of the global internet. And among the WSIS propositions is the idea of access for all, and from our perspective, learning for all. But it also took place in the context where things like blogging, where things like taking pictures, where things like expressing yourself in free speech are thought as radical. A radical is a perspective, isn't it? And what sometimes seems ordinary for one person seems radical for another. Part of the message here is that technology changes everything. And you've probably heard a lot of times how we should not be driven by the technology, we should be driven by what we're trying to do, and we should forget about the technology and focus on what we're trying to do, but technology changes everything. Exactly 24 hours ago, I was sitting in an airplane, seat 20A, looking outside the window at 35,000 feet, and what I saw out the window looked something like that. I saw the mountains of Greenland. I was flying here from Holland. And as I was sitting there looking at the mountains of Greenland, again, I'm asking, how did I get here? And I started thinking about my capacities, what I can do, what technology has brought to me. And I realized that I can, quite literally, I could do it now if I had wireless, and I may have wireless here, reach out and with one click of a button, touch somebody halfway across the world. And this is not some sort of wild-eyed dream. This is not some sort of hypothesis that I'm floating for your consideration. What I'm saying is, I can do this. I know I can do this. I have done it. And again, I ask, how does it happen? But I also ask, well, what follows from that? Because technology changes everything. What is radical? Let me read from my homepage. A system of society or learning where each person is able to rise to his or her fullest potential without social or financial encumbrance, where they may express themselves fully and without reservation through art, writing, athletics, invention, or even through their avocations or lifestyle. Is that radical? John Stuart Mill again. In addition to talking about the subjection of women, Mill had many things to say about education. And among the things that he had to say about education is that it is not only in the interest, but it is the right of people in society to receive a free education. Education, wrote Mill, is incompatible with poverty. Radical ideas. Public education. Education for everyone. Is that radical? Many of you will have also read Ivan Illich. Illich. Can never pronounce that name. That's okay. And Illich looks at the very enterprise that all of you are involved in, schools and schooling, and he writes, the current search for education funnels, does that sound familiar? Must be reversed into the search for their institutional inverse, educational webs, which heighten the opportunity for each to transform each moment of his living into one of learning, sharing, and caring. As you can tell, I can't see it on the screen here. Seymour Papert, radical professor, written many books, among the sorts of things he says, what grade are you in? What class are you in? These are, from the point of view of someone like Seymour Papert, odd questions. They are, he writes and has written many times, artifacts of a time when the technology was different, when the technology only enabled us to produce education on a mass basis, class basis, program basis. What is radical? When new technology, the press, the gun, the computer, empowers a previously disempowered generation, the ideas brought forward by that newly empowered population are universally condemned as radical. And today, the computer is empowering society in a way we've never seen before. And now we come to the part of the story that you're familiar with. We've all heard about things like the millennials, Generation N, there are too many names of them to mention. The generation that has grown up with this power, this empowerment, quite literally in the palm of their hands. A generation that operates, we are told, at Twitch speed. A generation that expects instant feedback. A generation that expects not simply to receive, not simply to be a consumer, but to be part of the production process, to be in control of the experiences that they have. And that includes learning experiences. We've seen also in the documents, and some of you may be familiar with it, the True Clue Train Manifesto, that talks about marketplaces as conversations. And again, the idea that the traditional separation between producer and consumer is no longer the case. And sometimes when I'm talking about education, what I like to say is that we need to transform learning from something that is a service that we provide for people to something that they do for themselves. And that's an idea that comes out of the Clue Train Manifesto. But it's also radical. Imagine that. Your students teaching themselves. And we've seen in recent years a lot of work and a lot of writing under what may be put loosely under the heading of learner-centered design, constructivism, active learning, things like that. And again, this is representative of a similar set of trends in society. But out of this flow radical ideas. We have now technology, which you will be talking about in this conference, and which, from looking at the program, is the bulk of the content of this conference, empowering technology. The interactive web, sometimes called Web 2.0. And the concept of the interactive web is very simple. The concept of Web 2.0 is very simple. It transforms the web from a medium to a platform. In other words, it transforms the web from something you consume to something you create. And by you, I mean not just you in this room, but I mean all of your students, because they have these tools now, and as I'm sure you know, they're probably better at many aspects of them than you are. For one thing, they'll have heard of them. Yeah, there's a bunch of things you already know about, obviously. The blogs, how many of you have heard about blogs? A sea of hands. The wiki, which is like a blog on steroids, because nobody owns it. Anybody can contribute to a wiki. And you may have heard of Wikipedia, the biggest wiki, the biggest, baddest wiki of them all. With a core authoring group of 10,000 people and tens of thousands of more hangers-on, of which I'm one, building an encyclopedia from scratch, an encyclopedia that is built by people, for people, freely accessible, freely editable, and it has more readers than traditional encyclopedia, it has more articles than traditional encyclopedias. It's at least as authoritative as traditional encyclopedias, and it's certainly more current. If podcasts, I'm recording this talk today, After I finish this talk, I'm going to take my recording, and assuming that the microphone didn't blow up, I'm going to encode it into MP3. I'm going to use an FTP program, upload it to my website. I'm going to make a little inscription in an RSS file, and by this afternoon, this talk will be heard by people around the world. Not everybody, obviously, because not everybody wants to hear me talk. But some, enough. I will reach out and touch these people, somehow. Screencasts, same concept, except you capture your screen and distribute it around the world. Video, coming into stream now. Video blogs, or vlogs, or vlogs, or whatever you want to vlog it as. Instant messaging. One finger, and I'm communicating in text around the world with people. Skype, which is like your long-distance phone, but without the phone company, and without the bills. And again, these technologies allow me to reach out and connect with, on a personal level, people around the world. That's revolutionary. Wireless access, which I hope we have here. And am I looking for nods in the back? And we do have it here. Which means that, I mean, think about the empowerment. Instead of listening to me, because you have wireless access, you can be reading your email. Which puts the onus on me to be more interesting than your email. Or you can be sending messages back and forth as I talk, commenting on what I have to say. If this were a full-featured conference, we'd have another screen up there, and your messages would be posted on that screen as I talk. And it'd be, if they set it up smartly, it'd be back there where I can't be looking at it. But again, like before, like the question of how I got here, this is how it happened, right? These are the technologies. This doesn't tell us how we got here. And it doesn't tell us where we go next. Well, let's look at some of the radical ideas that have emerged out of this new discussion, out of this new empowerment. Radical ideas like connectivism. This is an approach and a philosophy of learning espoused by George Siemens that talks about the idea that knowledge is distributed across society, and we can see this on a daily basis when we watch people like George and myself and Alan Levine and Scott Wilson and James Farmer, I've covered 5 countries and 4 continents with that list, working together on a single idea. And the single idea isn't in any one of our heads. That single idea is spread across society. And the idea, the knowledge, is contained in the connections between the individual concepts and the individual people. Which, unsurprisingly, is pretty much the same way your brain works. And it's an odd radical concept, but if you think about the knowledge that we have, like how I can be in a 747, 35,000 feet above Greenland, looking down at the mountains below, that knowledge, how to get me there, exists in no one person. There is no single person who can build and fly safely a 747 over Greenland. That knowledge is contained in the pilot and the co-pilot and the navigator and the flight attendants and the person who built the tires and the person who built the windshields and the people who checked the wings to make sure they won't fall off the plane. No one person. The knowledge is quite literally distributed. And if the knowledge is distributed, what is learning? And what George Siemens says, and I'm largely in agreement with him, is that learning is the connections that we form ourselves with other people. It is the reaching out through this technology and touching of people. Other radical ideas. Open access. You were talking about open access during this conference. The idea that the knowledge that we produce, the books, the music, the photographs, ought to be freely accessible and freely shared and freely exchanged. And in our current context, yeah, that's radical, because our current context is that people have content and they take that content and they keep that content for themselves and they charge people money for it. And that works in an industrial environment, but we are in an environment where our knowledge and indeed our very lives depend on the connections that we draw between people. And for that system to work, the electricity, the water, the power has to flow unimpeded through that network. And that means open access. And if you look at things like the Kloutrain Manifesto, or even more importantly, if you look at the actions, the behaviors of people who have been empowered with this new technology, you're able to observe that we're moving toward an even more radical an idea, an open society, a society characterized by transparency, by accountability, by partnerships, by connections, one in which communications, rather than machine guns, rule. Radical. In this picture, learning is a network phenomenon. Like George said, it is based on a web of user-generated content. Now, I want you to think about the implications of that for a second, because what has happened is that the tools for the creation of knowledge and meaning have been placed not simply in the hands of publishers, not simply in the hands of teachers, but in the hands of learners themselves. And in this new picture, the learners themselves will be creating the educational materials. And your role changes as teachers, educational technologists, from being the people who provide the service of providing educational content to being the people who facilitate and help and empower students and learners to create their own content. Radical. A lot of people say the stuff that I have to say is radical. But what is radical? We're learning as social networks and communities. We're learning as much about the connection your students can make with each other and with people who know and with the community, with the architects, with the lawyers, where they can learn about trees in a forest and justice in a courtroom, where they have and can control their own identity, their own meaning, their own place in society, where they work with the freely accessible materials instead of just consuming them. They bring them together, they remix them, they repurpose them, they build their own meaning, their own learning, and indeed their own life and their own identities. Radical. This is the picture that's been floating around the blogosphere, or at least the educational part of the blogosphere. Many of you have seen this many times. I'm going to stop showing it soon because it's becoming a bit hackneyed. But right now it's important that you do see it, except those of you who have the misfortune to be behind me. I'll just step back for a second. For those of you blocked by the podium, that didn't help a bit. But the concept is straightforward. At the center is what Scott Wilson has titled the future VLE. And in my mind, at the center there is the student, the learner, you. And that is the place where learning happens. Instead of going to a school, to a university, to a commercial provider, those resources are out there scattered across a web of interactions, and they are brought in, remixed, reworked, and sent out again. And it is this process of bringing in, reworking, remixing, using the learning materials or other materials or photographs or videos or connections or conversations with mentors or conversations with friends. That is what produces the learning. This is a very different picture and a very different technology from what we're using today in schools, where today you're used to things like Blackboard, WebCT, now collectively known as BlackWeb. Where the school is at the center, the teacher is the provider, and the student is the passive recipient of knowledge and the wisdom of the elders. Now, what is radical? I thought about this. I spent a good part of my life living on the web, on the internet. My father worked for the telephone company. So yes, your long distance bills did pay for my food at one point. And so I've been embedded in the network, if you will, my entire life. And when I was speaking a few months ago in North Bay, I was thinking about this because they asked me to talk about personal professional development. And I thought, okay, well, what are three essential principles for personal development? And I came up with interaction, usability, and relevance. And individually, each of these seems not so radical, but collectively, they create something very different from what we're used to today. Interaction, the capacity to communicate with other people interested in the same topic or using the same online resource. A simple thing. It's me and you talking. Using the telephone, using instant messaging, using Skype. And why do we want it? Very simply. For human contact. Talk to me. Or to learn. Human content. Teach me. But it's radical. It's radical even in this day and age. And in order to get interaction into our own lives, we have to be, if you will, interaction guerrillas. If interaction hasn't been provided, and in many cases it hasn't been provided, create it. Blog it. Look at this talk here. Where's the interaction? Someone, for interaction to occur, is going to have to blog this talk. Or send me an instant message. Just not a ticking number. If your software, BlackWeb, doesn't support interaction, create it. Insert JavaScript into the pages. Insert RSS feeds into the pages. Create that flow of information where none exists, even if it is not supported by the software. Root around the blocking. You work in the school system. I was at a government office about 2 months ago. I won't say which government office. And I went to do my typical presentation, and I went to show them a blog, access denied. I went to show them blog lines, at least that's an aggregator, access denied, blocked. So I told the people in that room, look, you don't have to put up with this. You have handheld computers that pick up internet from the phone company. Use those. You should not put up with being blocked. And if for some reason your interaction is being blocked, your educational system is being made dysfunctional, root around it. Radical. Usability is, believe it or not, radical. What is usability? Simply consistency of design. I know what to expect. I've learned that in airports. I can go through an airport pretty well brain dead and have. But departures are on the second floor, arrivals on the first floor, and if you're on the third floor, you're lost. And simplicity. And again, think about the tools that you're using. I can reach out across the world and communicate and touch a person with one push of the button. It's that level of simplicity that we seek to achieve. Why did the telephone work? Because all you had to do is push a couple of buttons. You didn't need to connect. You didn't need to boot it up, happily. And eventually it became automatic. Elevators used to require operators. Now even a child can use them. You have to be a usability guru too, or gorilla too. Probably if you're using a content management system, it's in an important way dysfunctional. I work with the Standards Council of Canada. They use a high-powered content management system. I've spent my entire life in technology, using applications, installing stuff, writing software. I cannot figure out how this thing works. So I blog it. I go to Blogger, which is a dead simple interface, one field and a title if I feel like it, hitting the button, I've just posted something on the web. I don't need to do anything more than that. Photos. Your photos won't upload into whatever system you're using. Simply use something like Flickr, which again is a very simple system. Is your email not working? Are you in, as they say, Outlook hell? Create a Gmail account. Our organization, I probably shouldn't tell you this, is standardized on Microsoft, and yet I maintain my own email client, my own email address, and I route around the constraints of the email system because I want an email system that functions because it's important to me. Google Base. Have a look at Google Base. Now, your presentation will be a bit different from mine. Right now, Google Base still thinks I'm in the Netherlands, so it's showing up with a whole bunch of Dutch resources. But when you go to Google Base, you'll find things like access to online courses. All right there. Relevance. Relevance is what I want, when I want it, and where I want it. It's the information, the knowledge, the learning that I need now. Not 10 years from now. I'm still waiting to use calculus. I'm assuming one day it'll be relevant, but... And the irony is, because I did study calculus, I studied it 3 times. Once in high school, once in college, and once in university. And I actually did pass it, but when I need to use calculus, and I'm sure I will have to learn it again. And I will need knowledge, learning, that is where I want it, how I want it, when I want it. I'll need it right in the context of whatever I'm working on. Is your learning set up like that? Is any of your learning set up like that? Well, a lot of it is. The internet's pretty much set up like that. You need something, you need to know something, you're on the internet, google.com. Probably the most powerful learning tool there is. How did that happen? You can be a relevance gorilla too. And you probably have to, because most of the information is not arrayed in a manner that is relevant to you. Developing unofficial channels of information, your network of connections. I talk to people like George, like Scott, like Alan, like James, and others much more than I talk to, say, my manager. Create project pages, class pages, whatever pages, hobby pages, fishing pages, canoeing pages, anything that's relevant to you on your wiki. Don't have a wiki? Jotspot.com. Free. And think about all of this in the context of the networks that you are creating and that you are building. I talked not too long ago in Colorado. I went and talked to the people at EduCause, and the EduCause is sometimes thought of in my mind as the other side. And I drew on a talk by Charles Vest, who talked about what made the American university system successful. I thought it was a bit ironic because the three attributes that he listed weren't actually attributes of the system. But I thought they were good attributes. Diversity. Many objectives, many goals, many frames of mind, many opinions, many beliefs. Instead of trying to make all of us one, it is a celebration of our diversity and the connections between individuals that is makes a successful network. Interwoven. And I guess, you know, you look at a network on a wall or in a diagram, it almost seems sort of obvious, but instead of separate silos, instead of places to do learning and places to do working and places to do gaming, all these things being separate, the many different activities of our lives come together. One feeds on the other. I sit there on an airplane over Greenland, and it becomes part of my talk. Interwoven. Bringing things together. And then open. Allowing, encouraging, fostering the development of new ideas, new points of view, new resources, sharing, exchanging, collaborating, remixing, repurposing, feeding forward. A network in which the information, like electricity, simply flows. And it's with all of this in mind that I've put together my own ideas of what education of the future looks like. And I was just in Holland presenting a talk, and the talk, through happenstance, was titled The Metaversity. And I put up a diagram. It looks like this, with boxes for resource profiles, resource aggregation, you know, all the tools and the toys that I've been talking about over the years. And, you know, it was an open sourcing technology conference. The people looked at that diagram, they looked at the context and the background in which I presented it, and they said, it's radical. How could this ever work? Where did this come from? And I'm sitting there on that airplane wondering why they were calling this radical. And that's how I come to be here giving this talk today. Is it radical to have many points of view to describe a resource or a person or an idea instead of just one, the publisher or the vendor? Is it radical to have at your hands a means of creating easily, without having to get a degree in computer science, content that people can read, people can learn from, and people can share? Is it radical to have a place, your own place, to put that content and to make it available to the world? Is it radical to suggest that there can be, if you will, an economy of learning resources where those that are free and those that are commercial can inhabit the same space? And is it radical to expect that you can have a system for representing digital rights that does not take over your computer and insert viruses into it? Is it radical to expect that readers around the world, and not just the privileged few, can gather freely published resources and bring them together and organize them by topic or by interest or by date or by author? Is it radical that you and your students can have a place to do your work, a place not only to read, to consume, to passively receive, but to work with and create your own thing and to aggregate and move and manipulate the contents that are freely shared with other learners around the world? Is it radical that you and I and our students should not only have our own personal identity, but own our own personal identity and be free to shape our personal identity and share it? Is it radical to ask that learning be available not simply on a computer, but also in our handhelds and even in our appliances, so that we can learn when, where, and how we need to learn? Is it radical that each of us should have tools available at our fingertips in order to share our ideas, our content, our photographs, or whatever? Is it radical to want to live in a community? What is radical? To be radical is to grasp empowerment and to divine a vision based on that empowerment for a better, freer society. A society where knowledge and learning are public goods, freely created and shared, not hoarded, in order to extract wealth or influence. Radical. You know, from 35,000 feet, the cities all look pretty much the same. Stars in the night. And when the low cloud shrouds the lights, it looks like a fisherman's web cast across the city, linking them together. You know, and sometimes when I'm in that airplane, flying at 30,000 feet, I want to put my hand over the side and reach down and touch that web and connect with the people down below. And sometimes I think about the airplane crashing down from the sky into the sea, a coral room. And I look at the boats flying above me. And I reach up to touch, once again, the people whose lives I've touched over the years. And I touch someone. I touch someone who put their hand over the side of the boat to see how it feels. How did it happen? It happened because we made it happen. It happened because we wanted to believe that there is some good in the world, some right, some justice. It happened because we believed in ourselves, because we made that leap from believing that nothing is possible to knowing that the future is, as radicals believe, what we make it, not what simply happens to us. It happened because there's a light at the end of the road, there's a spirit that soars in the sky, and there's a peace and a harmony that belongs to and is the right of each and every one of us. Thank you.